me tell you of the days of high adventure.
Everybody, I'm Kevin.
And this is John.
And this is 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger, the podcast where we take a long, hard look back at some of our favorite action movies from the era of Arnold.
Schwarzenegger is the icon of the genre, and we're taking a deep dive into some of these 80s and 90s cult action movies. And folks, we're breaking them all the way down. Hey, Kevin. How are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing great.
I'm glad.
The wine is flowing. It's a new year, a new-ish movie for us.
It is. This is a favorite of both of ours.
I love it.
It's a really good one.
It's the third installment of our breakdown of 1996's The Rock.
Welcome to The Rock.
Yes, indeed. You want to try to catch us up on this crazy ass plot?
Yeah. So where we are in the previous two episodes is that General Francis X. Hummel is holding the world hostage by way of Alcatraz prison and 81 hostages with some VX gas rockets, saying he wants reparations for U.S. Marines and soldiers that have been forgotten and left behind, not even given burials by the country that they served valiantly. And so what's happened is that the FBI and the U.S. government are putting together a strike team, or they're trying to, led by an ex-SAS operative that was wrongfully imprisoned, played by Sir Sean Connery.
Rest in
peace. To disarm the rockets is when Dr. Stanley Goodspeed, played by Nick Cage. So they're trying to put together this motley crew, and things are not working out so far.
That's all of that's accurate.
Yeah, and so we had Mason, Sean Connery's character, trying to escape the Fairmont Hotel by way of Humvee that he stole, and Goodspeed in hot pursuit in a yellow commandeered Ferrari.
He did elude Goodspeed and the rest of the FBI.
That's right.
So,
when we last picked up, I think Goodspeed had just, like, gotten out of the Ferrari, was totaled, and he just, like, beat up some punk kid and stolen his dirt bike. And that's where we're at.
That's exactly where we're at. So as Goodspeed is riding this bike, he calls back to his partner in the laboratory in D.C., who informs him that he's quitting the FBI. That's his buddy, Marvin.
Yeah, man, I've had enough.
He said he's going to go to Orkin and make roach motels.
Yeah, I wonder
if that is, like, an option. You know, like, if you're, like, a chemical expert, then that's, like, a type of job you would do.
It's like, well, I'm not cut out for the pressure of this government job.
Because he folded quick when they were in their bomb scare diffusing shit earlier.
And over the course of the movie, we find Stanley referring to, he's like, oh, the pressure.
I love it.
Yeah, he's just like, I'm into the pressure.
I was thinking earlier in the shower about the fact that, like, that Goodspeed thrives under pressure and this other guy doesn't, and, like, how big of a component that must be to that type of a job, you know? And then I was thinking about, like, there must be a dozen dudes who can throw a football as good as Patrick Mahomes or as good as Tom Brady, but if you can't do it under pressure, like, that's half the job.
Well,
you know?
We talk about a lot, like, reference careers in music and things, and, you know, you see it more in, like, pop music or things like that. But even for the classical music crowd, if you're traveling full time year round, it takes a special breed to be able to do that and maintain a family life and everything else. And it's hard. It's hard to do. And so I imagine it's the same thing with any of these. I mean, not a nuclear, chemical, whatever expert saying, like, you know, that's definitely more important and more difficult to maintain. But yeah, if you can't deal with the pressure, then you can't deal with the job.
True. I see it.
Yeah.
So we got Goodspeed. He's asking this dude, Marvin, who's kind of like packing his desk up or whatever, I guess.
Right.
Like, he's asking him, I need you to track down a prison record for a prisoner, John Mason. You know, look at the record of prison transfers, whatever. He was transferred from Wolfsburg in 76 or something like that.
To San Quentin. He says San Quentin,
San
too.
San Quentin to Wolfsburg.
I remember which was to the other.
I think Wolfsburg was like supposed to be the last stop.
Right.
So Marvin, he tells him he can see there's a transfer. He can see some vital information, but there's no name. What do you say? Like place of birth, Glasgow.
Yeah, he sees place of birth. Everything else is a question mark. And it's Glasgow, Scotland.
There's a next of kin that's Jade Angelou with an address in San Francisco.
Right. Convenient.
I feel sure that that's not how that would work at all.
No. Nope.
Like, they wouldn't just wipe the name but leave everything else.
He was born in Glasgow, Scotland. cool.
We're leaving the next of kin, but we'll delete the name.
As long as he was christened, we've got what we came for.
So, anyway, he gets that information from his buddy Marvin, Goodspeed does. He arrives at Jade's house just as two young women are walking out the door.
I love that he spots them leaving from a house that neither of the two of us could afford. Like, no. Who knows where that house is?
If that's meant to be in San Francisco, that's unattainable.
I was like,
unless it's split into six apartments or something.
Noe Valley or something where that house cost $3 million?
I don't know. It was pretty, like, it wasn't one of these places where it's, like, building jutted up to building. It was, like, she had a yard.
It was a single house, a single dwelling home that probably cost $3
million. Yeah, for sure.
With roommate, friend, girlfriend, whoever
Stacey
is. Yeah,
what do we think? What's the relationship between these two ladies, do you think? It doesn't matter, obviously, but what do you read?
Like, I'm just wondering, like, what does one of them do? If one of them owns that house, what do they do?
Maybe they're both actresses.
Well, then they're both models. They can't afford. Well, I don't know. Maybe if they're both really successful models, if they're supermodels, maybe they could afford that house.
But I got the impression that they could be in a relationship together.
Yeah, or they're both super successful, like the buddings of the nations of Silicon Valley.
Oh, you think they're like technical?
Could be, but they don't live in Silicon Valley.
No, but I'm intrigued.
Yeah.
Anyway. He follows the ladies to the Palace of Fine Arts, which is like in the Presidio near the Presidio. It's a place that's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I walked around it. It's just like the movie doesn't do it justice for how cool it is, like the columns. And
I just drove by it. It's very striking.
Claire Forlani is there from like Mallrats and other things. She is so beautiful.
She is.
I don't know what's become of her. I don't know if she still works. I think she does.
I think she does as well.
I don't watch whatever it is that she's doing, but she is just a stunning
beauty. Not on purpose, just we haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah. It's on my ever-growing list. So we get there. Claire Forlani is Jade. Jade meets John Mason. We get the impression, right, that they've never met.
Well, yeah, like, right, he's like Jade, and both women turn around. We get the feeling that he doesn't know which one is Jade, and Stacy, the friend, woof. Not, she's unattractive, but she's like not a good
actor. She's just not a good actor.
I'm Stacy, her friend.
Jade's friend.
It was very weird.
It was like watching Frankenstein act or something. she just wasn't great. I mean, shout out to you, Stacey. You've been in a blockbuster movie. It's just more than I've ever done.
A Michael Bay film.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Mason asks if Jade was afraid to come alone, and like rightfully she was.
I think they've also it seems like they've only ever seen pictures of each other.
Yeah,
like,
they've
never met.
Yeah, so like Stacey, Jade asks like Stacey to give them some space. Mason says that the last picture I saw of you was when you were 10. And Jade says...
What'd she say? She had a picture that her mom had or something?
My mom had one of you that I found in her shit when she died.
Okay.
And then he's like, oh, okay, can we take a walk?
Yeah.
And that's when we see Goodspeed calling, hey, I'm here.
The phone. He's saying, like, they're at the Palace of Fine Arts, you know, bring the cavalry or whatever.
Yep.
Mason is, making efforts to try to, extend what bridges to Jade.
Right.
Jade's not really feeling it.
Yeah. I like that he tells her, I always thought that your mother was special, and you and I talked about this.
It was a one-night stand, right?
Yeah, that apparently they met at a bar after a Zeppelin concert.
That's what she said in, 75, 76, it
But,
seems
I mean,
like.
That's kind of the meet-cute that you dream about, right?
Yeah, that was, the physical graffiti tour.
I'm what a story to tell the grandkids.
Do you think did Mason go to that concert, or was he just hanging around the bar?
No, I'm with you that he was at the bar that night in San Francisco, and and young Jade's mother walked through the doors, and he was like,
if he had been,
but of course you are.
Oh, he looking like Sean Connery.
Yeah, she was
like Zardoz. Oh. He had the full ponytail
with the thigh high boots,
with the thigh high boots
and the bandoliers and nothing
hair,
else.
Just, so yeah, I'm with that. I mean, we feel like Mason was in prison. We feel like Mason was in prison, cut off from like the rest of the world.
Yeah, and had just broken out.
So it'd be weird for him to be like, I'm breaking out because I want to go to this Zeppelin concert.
Nah, I think he was just in a bar.
But that was not his Alcatraz escape.
No,
that was
correct.
Another escape because the years don't line up for
that. Yeah, so we think that was later.
Yeah, he must have multiple prison escapes, which makes sense. They called him like an escape artist.
Right, and so he says that he likes to think of Jade's mom as being a romance that could have led to something else. And
that's
she
right.
lets us know that their relationship got broken up because Federale showed up
like,
and hauled him back
if,
to prison.
If the FBI hadn't kicked in the door and taken you back to prison.
Yeah,
and...
so I mean, it was like bang, bang, literally bang, 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 if you want to get down to it. But like, and he got hauled off and that was the last any of them ever heard.
Right. And she wants to know what he did that wound him up in jail, I guess. And Mason says he doesn't have a lot of time, but he'd like to try to have a relationship with her.
I love the line, you're almost the only evidence that I exist.
You really feel for him in that moment.
I do, and he plays it very compassionately, and she's like, we don't really know each other, but he's like, you know.
Goodspeed is like eavesdropping on the whole thing, and he's like overhearing this stuff.
I love the way that Nick Cage plays this whole thing of overhearing it, because you get a look of sympathy on his face, like, mm-hmm. He's not a hardened mercenary or anything. Like, you think that he's like, oh man, it must have been terrible to be locked up in prison like this.
Yeah.
And have no relationship with your kid. And now he's going through something where
he's got a kid on the way.
Yeah, exactly.
You get the feeling also that Goodspeed suspects that FBI Director Womack is like a shady dude.
Right. It's also in this moment that while all this is happening, we get the interesting Celtic theme in the score.
Like
there's strings
sort of like
and like a little flute whistle thing happening. This is the theme that comes back in places in the movie where we reckon where it's sort of like Mason's redemption
it's
theme.
It's either Mason's redemption or like the friendship of Mason and Goodspeed.
Or any kind
bond.
Of any. Yeah, it's very strange, but it occurs two or three times over the course of the movie. Anyway, Mason's flustered, but promises that he's not an evil man and that.
Yeah.
If she believes, then that's a start.
That's like the magic of Connery, I think. He's got like such dignity that like as an audience, we feel certain that he's not really a bad guy.
Yeah, agreed.
So now, you know, Jade seems to be softening a little bit. And then we get the sound of sirens growing as the FBI vehicles all like arrive on the scene.
Right.
Jade asks
aggressively
if,
arriving on the scene.
Did like, they all converge from all directions, like on cue,
screeching,
you know, in unison.
Screeching halts.
Jade asks if the cars are here for him, and he sort of sheepishly nods. Then she's like, oh my God, you broke out of prison again, didn't you? Like, why are you getting me involved in this?
And I love this, that Goodspeed like trots up, identifies himself, and is like, John, it's like, come back to... He's working with us. Come
yeah,
on
he's
back.
Very
We've
friendly
gotta,
with him. He's like, hey, John, what do you say we get back to work?
He's helping us resolve a dangerous situation.
Yeah.
I love the way that Nick Cage played that whole scene.
That was beautiful. That's, like, such a stand-up move from Goodspeed, who really doesn't, like, owe him anything.
No, nothing at all. And it helps Mason save face in front of Jade.
Yeah, so...
It's awesome.
So, yeah, Mason goes with Goodspeed peacefully, and... You know, he's very thankful to Goodspeed for his discretion. You know, that's when Nick Cage busts out, what do you say we cut out the chit-chat a-hole? Draws attention to the fact that he doesn't
that's
swear?
That's the first thing that really clued me in after the fact, after years of watching this movie and not realizing, God, he doesn't curse.
Yeah.
Like, going back and then reading that he elected to play the role where Stanley's this... like clean cut guy. It's
yeah, he's
awesome.
Like he's a Boy Scout.
Yeah,
he
exactly.
wears the class ring. I don't know if you know.
Yeah,
like,
I didn't
like,
know
that. Is
that
like the FBI Academy ring or like his university ring
oh,
or something
man, that's
like that?
Great.
I was kind of feeling Goodspeed's style, like in general, with the suspenders on the suit.
Oh, totally.
Like that. Was like,
totally.
I was loving all that.
Me too.
An angry Womack comes running up with his shoulders in a sling. He's screaming at Mason.
Well, I mean, it's like. As much as Mason, as much as Goodspeed was like trying to like paint a moment for Jade there, they immediately start putting Mason in cuffs. He's like, you cocksucker. I'm going to burn or put you behind the door. Anyway.
We cut to that FBI like mobile headquarters in the warehouse or whatever
that is. It's awesome, whatever it is.
They've got all the gear in there now. Mason is like briefing the SEALs. They've got like he's saying whatever the tunnels can give you access to anything within Alcatraz.
You're talking like where they get a scale model of Alcatraz at this
there's
hour.
There's an amazing model of Alcatraz sitting on the table. Like it's all painted and stuff. It's amazing.
It's stunning, really.
They did not whip that up. That like nope. Either came from the Parks Department or somebody hooked them up or the Props Department just made.
Yeah, you're probably right that they're like whatever the last model is, we need it in this warehouse.
We want it
now.
On the table and. We want it on the table in 48
just for
hours.
Us to point at.
The SEAL commander, that's Michael Biehn.
Anderson.
He's trying to get Mason to give him like a step-by-step directions through the bowels. And Mason,
and he does good for most part, and then all of a sudden it's like he blanks.
He's like, yeah, I don't know. He's like, but I'll remember once we're inside.
All right. Is this, to most of the audience, to you and me, if we were 13, 14 years old, is it that he's obviously bluffing? He's like, I don't remember, but I remember when I'm inside.
No, to me it makes sense. Like if you told me, how do you get to
35 years later?
Yeah, how do you drive? Give me driving directions to such and such store in the town that I grew up. And I was
right.
Like, well, I could drive there, but I couldn't tell you step by step directions.
That's a good point. Especially now,
I need to see it. Once I see it, I'll remember. Oh yeah, I took the tunnel on the left.
It's like the blueprint was in my head.
Yeah,
I was underground for 3 days.
I totally bought that.
I did too. But I was wondering if. On the back end,
you think
if he
could have been bluffing that he wanted
thinking,
to get on that island?
If he was just thinking, like, get me on the island and I can get off the
get
island.
Get me away from Womack or whatever.
Exactly. I
think
it's a little bit
too.
Of both.
I think it could work both ways.
Yeah.
Womack jumps in. He tells him, you're not going in. And, like, dude, movies are weird. Like,
big time.
As the audience, I think we've all seen trailers for the movie. So, like, we just know that Mason and Goodspeed are going to wind up on Alcatraz.
Right.
But logically, there's like no reason to assume they'd be planning to bring Mason onto the island.
Sure.
Like, if anything, the SEALs would not want to bring along two untrained guys.
No.
Like, it's just it.
The fact that Michael Biehn is like, no, this is definitely like Paxton and Biehn both argue that we should bring him.
Well, they agree. That's like if he can't tell us, then the only way is to have him there. And I'm like, I guess so, but it. Yeah, it boggles my mind. Like
when there are 13 or 14 other guys' lives on the line and roughly 100, like a million other people's
yeah.
lives on the line.
We got to do whatever we got to do, I guess, to have the best chance to find it. But
yeah.
as I'm watching, I'm like, yeah, why the fuck would an audience sitting watching like assume that he's going to be brought along? Like he's just there to give them directions, not to be suited up with a gun. In a snorkel or whatever.
And I love all the shit that Mason gives Womack. He's like, looks like you're caught between the rock and a hard case.
He's fucking with him. How's your bowling arm? What a prick.
Just giving him shit. I also love, did you notice when he's like flipping the map that he flips the map in Womack's face and Womack has to like jerk
no,
his head backwards?
I didn't catch that.
He's like flipping the map into his face. It's awesome.
Beautiful.
He hates Womack.
Now, next up, Goodspeed is trying to brief the SEALs on like how where the gas is being stored.
In
I like
morgue.
This. He says it's because it's I guess it's being kept in a refrigerated space.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that the morgue is probably the easiest to refrigerate, but they must have also brought along their own gear to keep it cold.
But like, yeah.
But
like,
you could detect
the morgue
it from
wouldn't
a satellite.
Have been on. That's one thing that I ask myself throughout like the infiltration of the rock
yeah.
is like. There are lights on in all kinds of
the
places that rocks have never
would not
been on.
Be
the morgue would not be cold.
But
anyway.
So I assume they brought their own gear to keep it cold, but maybe
yeah.
the morgue is the easiest place to keep something cold.
Agreed.
It's like insulated or whatever.
Yeah.
But I totally dug it. There's all this like fucking Michael Bay lighting going on. It's like bright green neon lights, and there's black light for
everyone's
some reason.
Everyone's underlit
like,
with green.
It's blue as in greens and red like LEDs on the equipment
it's
and stuff.
Awesome
it looks great we can't complain he says that like Goodspeed is saying he needs to teach the SEALs how to defuse the rockets and neutralize the gas and then the commander SEAL commander Anderson is like that won't be necessary he's like
it's very necessary
and he's like no you're coming with us
flabbergasted.
That makes more sense to me because that's like a very technical thing that you couldn't necessarily teach a guy how to do it.
Yeah, you could say, unscrew the top of the thing.
Like, pull it out very carefully, and you got to withdraw the thing from the thing, and then
make sure it doesn't drop. Yeah,
it makes more sense to me that they would need the gas expert.
I love that, like, Goodspeed's line is like, what? And Womack's like, earlier today you wanted a gun. Now you're getting a gun and a wetsuit. That's pretty badass.
And, yeah, Goodspeed is, like, very hesitant.
Oh, he's flabbergasted.
Commander Anderson's like, have you ever been in a combat situation? Define combat, sir.
What do you make of this, like...
Lieutenant Shepard?
Was this like a career-making moment? Like, Shepard, you deliver this line like it's the only thing you're ever going to have in your life.
For the actor?
Yeah. He was in lots of stuff, but they were like, deliver this line
that
like your life is hanging on
that it. That was his big scene for this movie. Like, can you carry this line? And he does it with, like, rapid fire.
And no breath. He didn't
Lieutenant
breathe.
Shepard. An incursion underwater to retake an impregnable fortress held by an elite team of U.S. Marines in possession of 81 hostages and 15 guided rockets armed with VX poison gas.
In that case, no, sir. Excuse me.
He runs to the bathroom. Who the fuck pukes in a sink? I mean, I guess it's better than the floor, but...
I've puked in both.
You look for the toilet, but I didn't see a toilet visible in that room.
If you run into the bathroom and the only thing that you can see is a little grate in the floor... You aim for the grate in the floor.
Or if there's a sink, you go for the sink. Go in the urinal.
Exactly.
I didn't recall seeing a toilet, but like someone's got to clean that shit up.
He ran in and ran for the nearest receptacle. Exactly.
So Paxton, that's William Forsyth.
We love him.
The senior agent stationed in San Francisco.
Over the course of the movie, he does become like a more and more sympathetic figure.
Yeah, he started off as a real prick.
Yeah.
And then he sort of, like, he sympathizes, I guess, with Goodspeed, right?
I agree.
He comes in. This whole scene in the bathroom is, like, very stylishly lit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, it must be sunset or something because we're getting, like, reflection off the water and the windows. And it's, like, this beautiful lighting scheme or whatever. But Paxton's, like, wondering what's going on.
Yeah, you look like shit.
Goodspeed says, you know, he always knew that something like this could happen, but now he's, like, responsible for an entire city. And he's just... he's like ready to crack.
Yeah,
you know?
Same.
I get it. Paxton says, don't worry, you know, your training's going to come back to you, and you got the best SEAL team in the country with you, and you've got our great support team here. We'll talk you through everything.
Okay, I guess.
I guess so. Goodspeed now confides with him, right, that his girlfriend Carla, she's pregnant, and she's on the way to San Francisco. Paxton tells him, like, you know, you just stay focused on the job, man. We'll get Carla at the airport. We'll bring her here. We'll keep her safe.
Is that going to keep Carla safe if they bring her to the base?
The only thing safe is to get the hell out of the city.
Yeah. Like, their mobile base in that pier is not, like, impregnable or, like...
gas-proof?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they're fucked.
Yeah, they're going
to
die, too.
But I guess maybe it'd be like, if this shit's going south, you know, we have gas masks or we have atropine or...
We're going to stab everyone in the heart in the building with atropine.
Shit.
Congratulations. You and the baby will be fine.
But okay. This seems to put, I guess, Goodspeed at ease somewhat, right?
Dee, dee, dee. Yeah, I guess.
I don't know. But anyway, it's sunset at Alcatraz. The hostages are looking a little bit worse for wear.
Are they letting people poop is what I want to know.
Yeah, they didn't seem to have toilets in the cell.
No.
A lot of prisons have toilets in the cell. Tango and Cash had toilets in the cell. That is yours.
That's mine. Okay.
Now, we got General Kramer. He's calling Hummel from the White House.
Right.
He's telling him, oh, there's a problem with the account
transfer.
For those
of you who know who Kramer is, Kramer is the guy sort of like wrangling all the Special Armed Forces efforts, trying to placate Hummel in the first act of the film. He is a contemporary of Hummel's. We don't really know what their relationship is, but he's the one that's leading the efforts to try to keep the hostages alive and or lead the incursion into Alcatraz and or blow Alcatraz up with theoretical thermite plasma.
This is correct.
Yeah.
Now, he's telling Hummel what there's a problem with the account transfer.
We entered in one too many zeros.
Hummel's not trying to hear that.
No.
You know, Kramer's like, well, you know, the president, you know, his what his policy on negotiating with terrorists
is a familiar one.
Hummel says, you know, this is not about terrorism. This is about justice. And they've got 17 hours.
Hang up the phone.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, the thermite plasma is still not like a guaranteed solution. That's what they, I guess, most like to
do. Yeah, and this is where we see, we saw a guy that we saw in the first big meeting room scene, like a panic room scene. But we guess that he's the Secretary of Defense or Homeland Security.
Something like that, or he could be like the Director of National Security or something like this. At first, I'm like, is he the president? But he's definitely not the president. He's just a dude. But he never spoke before this moment.
We just saw his,
but
like,
now he seems
face.
To be like the guy in charge.
Right.
So he greenlights that SEAL mission.
2 hours later.
2 hours later, 15 hours to the deadline. The SEAL team plus Goodspeed and Mason, they're all geared up. There's several of these dudes in the scene were like actual SEALs.
Right.
Like a lot of the dudes who don't have any speaking role or whatever. And they like run a training ranch where they teach actors and stuff like that. But they're also active duty, which is like impressive to me. Commander Anderson, he's saying that
I can't say it without
I
me
almost
laughing.
Wanted to say Michael Biehn, but
Commander
we don't
Anderson.
Like to do that. He's Commander Anderson. So he's telling him, you know, Mason, you're gonna run point. Lieutenant Shepard, who got to deliver the little monologue earlier, you're gonna be attached to his hip. Then he's like saying Goodspeed, you know, he's our weapons specialist. He's going to disarm the rockets and neutralize the gas.
I like the look from Mason. Like he's like surprised or impressed.
He's like, oh shit. Like you're an expert.
Yeah.
Like you're not who you pretended to be earlier, but
interesting.
Yeah. The commander says, you know, once the mission is accomplished, we light the green flares. That's a signal that, you know, we've succeeded. He gives him the pump him up speech. You know, like, we're the fight of our lives.
It's a not so inspiring pep talk about how they're going up against probably the greatest battalion commander of the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
I shit you not.
Yeah.
It's not like, okay.
Well, it's interesting. Like on the commentary, Michael Bay had said that Biehn was sort of like nervous and self-conscious trying to do that scene that he kept freezing up or forgetting the lines or just wasn't convincing or whatever. And he pulled Biehn to the side and he's like, what's going on? And, you know, and Biehn is like, I got the Navy SEALs over here. And then I look over here and it's fucking James Bond. And like,
and that's awesome.
I'm supposed to be the guy who's in charge and I feel like a phony. And
you got to channel that power, man.
I like that, though, like that an actor would get self-conscious about it because you're with the real deal guy.
Do you know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of the story of Schwarzenegger in Commando.
That he's nervous about
like
doing
the morning before. He's like, I can't do this.
Yeah, I think you're like, shit, I'm
shitting bricks right now.
Because I think Michael Bay said something about, you know, the SEALs were just listening intently and not reacting, not giving him much. Not as an actor, you know, you're used to getting something from your co-stars to work off of. And the SEALs, as SEALs probably would do, they're just listening and memorizing all the stuff that they're being told.
Yeah.
And he's like, I think it just rattled him because he's like, are they not impressed? There used to be this great...
That's so funny.
This is like neither here nor there at all, but on Caddyshack, that was like Rodney Dangerfield's first ever movie.
Oh, I didn't know.
And,
And
so he was on the set and he's delivering great jokes, but like the actors with him aren't laughing, you know, because that's not how it works in a movie. And they said after a take, like Dangerfield was freaking out and he's like, I'm bobbing, no one's laughing. And he's like, yeah, no, they're not supposed to, they're trying hard not to laugh because it'll ruin the take. But like, I kind of get it. You're like, I think if you're an actor and you're like, these actors, they're not reacting to what I'm saying at all.
Especially
if
they're stage
actors.
They
could throw you off
your
game.
Actors.
You're like, they're not like nodding or like looking intense or psyched out or anything. They just look like they're bored by what I'm saying.
I was just trying to remember. It's like his third Navy SEAL turn.
Yeah.
Had he given a lot of speeches where people were like amped up?
No, maybe probably not.
I don't know. Like
maybe in Navy SEALs. That's a fucking awful movie. We watched that one time, didn't we?
Yeah.
It's such a Top Gun knockoff.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's not great. It'd be great to talk about.
It would be.
Bill Paxton.
And we're going to.
100%.
We love all of you. Anyway, in the helicopter.
I thought that was an incredible story, and I like the moment where they're piling in the helicopter and Mason like defers to Goodspeed, and he's like, after you, Ace.
Yep.
That's such like a stand-up moment. Like he's trying to build his confidence.
Yeah, well, he knows that he's only
as
good
as... It's all riding on him. Like, he's got to be the one to do these rockets.
He's only as good as the people leading the mission are.
Yeah. I loved that shit, dude.
It's really good.
The main helicopter takes off. It's flanked by a couple of Apache helicopters, right. Like little smaller gunship type. You might have seen them in a Rambo 2 or 3.
Oh, yeah.
Probably 3. there's like the equipment check going on in the helicopter. They're all wearing like the body cams and like whatever, wetsuits or all that good stuff. Goodspeed is very nervous.
I love
that acting.
The body energy that he's portraying, like bouncing around his legs and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
he's just fidgety.
I'd be doing the same thing.
He's like flinching as the guys are locking and loading and stuff like that. He's definitely like nervous. Meanwhile, Mason is like cool as can be.
He's awesome.
They brought along, it was interesting, they said they brought along some like
special operational gear.
The stuff that Mason had when he escaped in 63, it was like kerosene and a squeeze bottle, some waterproof matches, and 3 washers.
It's so awesome. That's your special operational gear.
Yeah, you never know. And they're giving out these green flares and atropine. This is where Goodspeed is like hesitant to take the atropine from him, and he's like, this could save your life.
Yeah, like, don't fuck with me on this.
I feel like he would be the first one to want to grab that atropine. He'd be like no, yes, I know.
Absolutely.
I know how important this is, even if the other SEALs don't know it yet.
I agree. I felt the same thing.
Of course, this is really just exposition, but again, you don't really notice because it's delivered like in an organic sort of a way. It works. Now, on Alcatraz, the bad guys, they're able to see that there's 3 helicopters approaching on the radar.
Right.
Carla has arrived.
Meanwhile, elsewhere.
Back on shore, Carla has arrived at the FBI center. She's like being held in an FBI van.
Yeah, they won't tell her what's going on.
That dude who kind of looked like Varys from Game of Thrones. Big sort of baldish guy. He won't tell her what's going on. So she sort of just hops out of the van and runs off.
Carla is a real hothead.
Yeah, she's fiery. I liked her, though.
Meanwhile, back
on the ranch, the helicopters, they diverge and the bad guys see it goes from 3 to helicopters to 2.
Yeah, I like how like Piss is like, sir, we've lost one of the choppers. He's like, Hummel is furious.
Yeah. What's weird is like, are the bad guys fooled? Obviously something fishy is happening.
Yeah.
If this is all going on, they lose someone off the radar or whatever.
Right.
But anyway, they're just like, what could they do, I guess, other than launch the rockets?
It was a different time.
So Goodspeed is like fumbling with his scuba gear. He accidentally like opens the valve on his air tank or something. It's like
a snorkel.
Yeah, he can't figure out how to turn that shit off, and Mason reaches over and cuts it off. He tells him like, you're clearly like, you're not an anti-terrorism expert.
Yeah, he's like, you better not fuck this up.
Yeah, you better not fuck it
up. I love that he's like, I know something about you, Godspell.
He's like, Goodspeed.
Godspeed. You just make sure you don't get us all fucking killed.
Yeah, he's not here to take any shit from Goodspeed.
Sean Connery fucking rules.
So Hummel has like run up to the lighthouse with the pair of binoculars. He's like trying to get a visual on what's happening. The bad guys, they suspect obviously.
Yeah, everything is pointing south on this.
Right. Now, was there a better way for them to infiltrate? I mean, than flying in on some helicopters and trying to make one disappear?
Yeah, I can't figure out if it would have been better to have more to approach and then to have a secret ship come on undetected from a different direction.
I mean, they had
the
little like, underwater sort of submersible thing. Could they have taken that all the way from the shore out to the island?
That's what I was wondering. Would it have taken too long? Would it have run out of gas? Because the currents are so strong.
It's a long way out there. It's like a 30-minute boat ride, and this thing underwater is probably moving slower than that.
I think anything by boat, unless it had been like a canoe or some semi-submersible, would have been detectable.
Yeah. At any rate, the SEALs, they jump out of the helicopter and on into the water and start heading towards the island.
So cold.
Those underwater shots were like nuts. There was a feature on the Blu-ray, I told you, where that stuff was all like miniatures.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't real men in water. It was like little marionette puppets on strings. It was shot like in a dry effects studio.
If I had never been taught to look at things like that, to like look at the mechanics of the legs moving, I would have never given it a second thought about that being
noticed.
About that being real live humans kicking their legs.
I suppose that is somehow cheaper than putting real men in the water.
Yeah.
Otherwise you'd put men
it's
in the water.
Crazy.
Right? It was wild though. Now, Hummel, back on Alcatraz, he's ordered his men to, like, go on high alert.
Yeah, something's up.
Yeah, they suspect something is happening here. The SEALs, they enter Alcatraz through, like, an underwater pipe, and they pop up in the cistern room.
Right. Anderson is immediately aggravated. Like, they've gotten up in there, and he's like, well, thanks for leading us into this. Like, there's no way out of this room.
Yeah. And Mason's like, no, we'll go through here. And like, through where?
The fucking furnace.
Under the furnace.
You see the Bay Foundry thing on the furnace?
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's Michael a Bay. Nice touch. Yeah.
That whole scene when they pop up is like chock full of Michael Bay touches.
But
like
why?
Shots of chains and dudes popping out of the water in slow motion with like guns drawn.
Why are the furnaces lit?
That's a great question. I think they even touch on that in the commentary.
Oh, really?
Like, why would they be lit? There's really no reason. They're like, well, you know, if there's rangers living there,
I guess that was the thing that I came back to is, like, I guess if they were trying to keep the place climate controlled because San Francisco is so bonkers as far as the weather that maybe that would make sense.
If you're heating any building at all there, maybe that's the best way to do it.
I can get behind that. That makes sense.
It's still, would it, yeah, it's unlikely, though. They acknowledged that was a plot hole, but they said, well, we justified it to ourselves by saying maybe if there's ranger station there and guys living there, then
that's kind of awesome.
That's why they keep it maintenance.
I do love when Commander Anderson asks Mason, like, how are you going to get inside? And he's like, through there. And like, it's a great bit with Shepard, Lieutenant Shepard, who's supposed to guard. And he's like, Commander, you said never to leave his side, but like, look at the with the flames on the things, and he's like stand fast,
Lieutenant.
It's awesome.
And he's like, yeah, I memorized the timing. I only pray they haven't changed it.
I bet they haven't. What do you think?
I hope not.
he
drops down.
Short.
He stops, drops, and rolls, man.
Thank you.
And he's like, he pulls down the ski mask. Have a nice day. And goes through, and they're like, the SEALs, they seem very impressed. Like, damn, this dude's got the goods.
Yeah, you know? Where'd you find this guy?
Uh-huh, that's classified.
Oh.
Cage doesn't even know.
No.
That's the truth of the matter.
He's just trying to be like, that's his way of saying, I don't even know.
Uh-huh. So now the bad guys are looking around, and they don't see any sign of anything going wrong, but Hummel's still suspicious. He tells them, like, keep looking.
Yeah, keep your eyes peeled.
Back in the cistern room, I guess Mason's been gone for a few minutes
now. It seems like he must have been gone because they're like, he's fucked us. We're dead now.
Yeah, like, I knew he'd fuck us. I think back on shore, like...
Yeah, back in the thing, it was like...
Womack's like, I knew it.
Always. Womack's always like, I knew it.
What would he be doing? Like, just gallivanting around the bowels of Alcatraz?
Escaping. Somehow. No one knows how.
Anyway, he's been gone for a while. The dudes are worried. But just at that moment, of course, Mason swings open the big heavy door and says,
welcome to the Rock.
That was a line written for the preview, wasn't it? Like,
written for Sean Connery. It's like,
amazing.
It's like, you don't have to say another word, but you have to say this sentence.
Now, the SEALs quickly move out. They come to like a junction where there's three different pipes they could go down.
And Gandalf says, I have no memory of this place.
That's that moment where Mason knows the right one.
Right.
That's what I meant earlier when I'm saying, like, I get how he's like, I can't tell you, I can't describe it, but I know when I see it, I'll know which way is the right way to go.
That way's the subway.
Yeah.
It'll drop you into the tunnels. And then all the SEAL teams drop into the tunnel, the same tunnel system that everyone from Tango and Cash to Big Trouble in Little China to Aliens to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's like we drop down into the sewers.
It's amazing. They drop down into that tunnel system and sort of fan out. Mason's like enjoying the hell out of it all.
Oh, yeah.
He's like got a big grin on his face. I think Goodspeed's like, what are you enjoying yourself? And he's like, well, it's better than my average day in prison.
Reading philosophy and avoiding gang rape.
Is that a permissible rape joke?
Yeah, totally. I think it is. Okay. But because he also says, though, that's not the problem. It hasn't been the problem lately. He's just, maybe I'm losing my sex appeal. And I can tell you, Sir Sean's ghost, if you're listening now, that now, like this many years after this movie released, like you were still like sexy to a generation of people after you were like this age.
I wish I looked as good as Connery at age 66.
Same, man.
I wish I looked that good now.
Yeah, same.
But yeah, he's amazing.
He was holding shit down.
This was all like done on this massive wet set that was built on a soundstage.
That's nuts to me.
They said that Connery had asked for the water to be heated, you know.
That makes sense.
And but then everybody got really sick. Like, they all got a really bad stomach flu, and they had a set doctor come by, and he's like, oh, yeah, it's like an incubator in here, like, with the heated water.
Interesting.
Like, that it should have been kept cold. That the germs were just, like, fucking spawning, you know what I mean?
So that's rough.
That's wild. Yeah, he said everyone got a really bad stomach flu.
Damn you, like, Shoshone. Damn you.
Now, up top, we got Rojas.
Tuco,
Raymond Cruz, the actor. He's reading activity in the storm drains, like seismic activity or something.
Yeah.
The bad guys start to mobilize. The SEALs, like, they hear the bad guys moving around up above them, and they all freeze.
Right.
The bad guys are like, it's this sort of, everyone's, like, listening. It's got real quiet.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I love that moment. Then the bad guys don't hear anything, so they move along. Mason tells the SEALs, you know, it's 97 paces to the shower room.
Exactly.
That's some fucking, that's a good memory.
Yeah. That's why I'm like, it's like he doesn't remember how to get there. He definitely remembers how to get there.
He remembers some specifics for sure.
He doesn't not remember, rather, is what I'm saying.
So the shower room, and that's going to be their point of entry on into the prison.
Yep.
Mason's directions are spot on because they wind up right underneath the shower room.
I love this cut to Hummel's men. Something's not right. I got a bad feeling about this.
I love that line, man. It's always killer.
Is it like that line is almost, it's mandatory in every action-adventure movie. It has to be. Aliens, it has to be there.
I got a bad feeling about this drop. You always say that, man. You always say, I got a bad feeling about this drop.
It's in New Hope. It's in countless others. It's in every Star Wars movie, for sure.
It always evokes a reaction, though.
Yeah, everyone's like, same. I don't like this.
So they send their, like, the
fiber optics.
Guy. He goes up the ladder. He sticks a little fiber optic kind of camera up through the grate. He's looking around. He sees the laser motion sensor.
I don't know what it was about the sound editing of, like, the, it was just the VO, because it was cut, like, months after the scene, like, with the two mirrors. But he's like, sir, I'm going to cut, it's some kind of prism. I'm going to cut the beam. It's just like, for whatever reason, the crispness of that, like, that audio recording stuck in my mind for, like, years. I'm just going to try to cut the beam. It's a prism. Like, just.
You liked it?
Yeah, just stuck in my head. It was just like, it was so serious, and everyone was just, like, hanging on, it was like on bated breath waiting to see what would happen.
Yeah, they go to what? To bypass the laser sensor by their customary means.
Right.
But as we know from before, John C. McGinley had put in, like, his special custom device.
Yeah, it's a failsafe.
That had like a, he called it a trembler.
Yeah.
Like, that would, if it
it's
got
like a little
tapped,
coil.
If it got tapped, it would vibrate and trigger the alarm.
Don't you feel bad for the Navy SEALs fiber optics guy who's a specialist in this field that says, I got it. Don't you feel bad? He's like, no, I nailed it. We're good to go.
So the dude Humphreys, who we referenced before, he's like, was the technical advisor and an actual former SEAL.
Right, right.
He was, like, very impressed by this part of the movie. He's, like, saying, you know, like, yeah, they're used to this, and that's exactly how we would do it, but we could never be prepared for something like this. He's, like, no matter how well-trained you might be as a team, like, if you run into the wrong sort of piece of equipment, like, there's just nothing you can do about
it. That's badass. I was, I
like,
love
that stuff feels like movie shit that doesn't really happen. But when you hear a real SEAL say, oh, yeah, this part really impressed me.
Everyone would die. Okay. Good night.
Well, it was interesting. He also said, I'll get to it in just a second.
Okay.
That's a teaser.
Okay.
Rojas.
Go, get
top,
there.
Rojas, yeah, he registers. They've got company. He scrambles all the men.
Someone touched the trembler.
That's right. They all start to convene on the shower room. Commander Anderson, he's telling Goodspeed and Mason, you sit tight down here with Shepard. We're going to go clear the room.
Shit's ramping up. It was like the tension is amping up.
Yeah,
time.
Man. After all but Shepard have entered the room, the baddies spring their trap. Like, they're up above in an elevated position. I've got the high ground.
I thought the exact. I have the high ground.
That's the great spot to be if you're in a
duel. You underestimate my power.
Now, that's where the real SEAL commander, Humphreys, said, this would never happen like this in real life, because we would never. You would never send your whole team into an unknown situation. You'd send one or two guys to clear the room. And then once you were sure it was empty, then you'd bring in the rest of the team up the ladder.
And that's a huge... I feel like that's... Now that I know that you've just told me that, then this scene is terrible.
I mean, it works. You don't think about it. But yeah, he said, like, if you're going in loud, if you're going in by surprise,
yeah.
you kick in the door and everyone runs in. But if you're trying to sneak in, you would not and be stealthy. You wouldn't send the whole team into a room that you didn't know it was clear. You'd send in one or two guys, and then if the shooting started, then the rest of your guys are safe.
Yeah, because then most of those SEALs still in the caverns would have gotten out.
Yeah, yeah. So I was interested to hear him say that, because as I'm watching it, I'm just like, oh, wow, that was like a...
That was stupid.
And it's a no-win situation, but you don't think of it as being not a tactically sound thing to have done.
Yep, agreed.
So, but yeah, the SEALs are like pinned down. You know, they're all covered from an elevated position. Hummel is instructing the SEALs to all drop their guns. You got Commander Anderson. He steps out and he's like, we both know I can't give that order.
This whole scene, like... Michael Biehn earned the paycheck. Him and Ed Harris, to me, is like this whole back and forth is...
It was a fucking
unbelievably
It was
good.
Like an acting showdown. Like they were both, who can be the most intense?
Order. I cannot get that order. Get that order.
It's awesome, so dude. You know, Hummel's telling him, you're in a no-win situation. He doesn't want to see anybody die here. And then Anderson saying like, you know, he's telling him...
I agree with you.
I'm sympathetic to what you're doing here, but we're soldiers. We swore an oath.
That's right. We've sworn orders to defend the country against enemies foreign and domestic.
That's a fucking great point. When the shouting match breaks out, it's like, I will not repeat that order. He's like, what the hell is wrong with you, man?
It's awesome, dude.
Like,
it's,
you walked into the wrong fucking room.
Oh, man, it's so good. It's so good.
Epic. Some of Hummel's dudes, like the new guys, are like itching to shoot.
Yeah, we see Fry. Fry is like, let's smoke these fuckers or whatever.
Yeah, whatever
he says.
It was. Yeah. It was like, yeah.
Let's waste these fuckers, is what he says. Yeah.
One of Hummel's men accidentally like knocks some loose brick down off the ledge and it falls down. And when that hits the ground, man, the shooting just pops off. Hummel is like immediately calling ceasefire. Because he didn't want this to happen, period.
Right.
I guess he feels like if he had some more time, he could have talked them out of it or talked them into dropping their guns and being taken prisoner.
Or say, like, just turn around and go back. I don't know. Like, I don't know what the outcome would have been. He would have taken them prisoner.
He
would have tried to take them prisoner.
He would have done anything in his power to avoid killing anybody, I think.
Right. But it's a total massacre anyway.
Oh, yeah. I feel like that's in the real world, like in a real shootout, I feel like that's how it goes. It's like over in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
And if you're pinned down from an elevated position, like you're getting wiped out. That's that.
Yeah. We see poor Lieutenant Shepard, whose one order was to stay with Mason, obviously conflicted, wants to go up. Goodspeed's like, please stay. He goes anyway. Is immediately shot dead by Fry.
He gets like shot right in the forehead.
A class act crazy. And falls back down the ladder.
Uh-huh.
Again, his one order was to stay with Mason.
But you can't really blame him. Like, he feels like he can help his comrades,
I just wonder how much easier would the job have been for the rest of the movie if Mason
had
a SEAL with him.
Oh, yeah.
That's my question. Anyway, I also love the last shot of Commander Anders Sanderson crawling across the ground, popping off a couple guys with his nine.
Pistol.
Like, yeah, just... That's a very Michael Bay moment, I feel like.
To go down shooting, and he's like heroic to the last moment.
This scene was hard. It's hard to watch. And like
It's very operatic, right? It's like slow motion with the music.
Very operatic. And Ed Harris's face sells it.
Hummel's not happy that it's come to this.
No.
It's a tough scene to watch. It like brings the mood of the movie down
way down
a little bit, for sure.
I guess because you didn't know what lengths... You didn't realize the lengths that they were willing to go to.
It is shocking, and you didn't expect to lose the entire SEAL team immediately.
Right.
Like, you expect, like, maybe they lose guys along the way, but, like, Michael Biehn was kind of a star.
Yeah.
Like, you don't expect him to be cast to be killed before, you know, that midway point of the movie.
Yep, agreed.
Now, Mason, he's kind of, like, businesslike, or he's been in, I guess... shootouts before.
Yeah.
He's like quickly like, let's take the equipment off of Shepard that we can and get the hell out of here. I think, you know, Goodspeed's sort of frozen and in shock.
Yeah, he's in shock.
Which
you can't
at all blame him. Back at FBI command, the guys see that like the SEALs have wiped out, but then they see that Mason and Goodspeed are still up and moving.
Right.
Like on their trackers or whatever. So Paxton's like, well, it's fucking over. Womack's like he feels like they've still got a shot. He's like, not if I know Mason.
So interesting. It's okay. All right, like, maybe.
Well, Mason's a warrior, I guess, and he recognizes that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a weird.
He's still a wild card, like big time.
So now Goodspeed is like tracking after Mason. He sort of seems to drop down and startle him in some way.
Yeah, Mason's like doing some sort of weapons check and making sure all the guns are still working, and Goodspeed drops down.
Like splashes down.
Yeah, and he's like startles him. And Mason's like, Goodspeed, I'm not going to kill you.
Well, he pulls the gun on him, and Goodspeed does seem to be like, he throws his hands up like, please don't shoot. He's like, I'm not going to kill you. But he does announce, he's like, but I'm not going to die on this island.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm getting out of here.
What do you say? Like, I promised a long time ago, I'm not dying here. Now, Paxton pops up over the radio.
Love it.
To Goodspeed. He's like, Goodspeed's telling him all the SEALs are dead. Mason's leaving. And he's like, you can't let him leave. You got to make him stay and help.
There's a problem, sir.
He has a gun.
He's got a gun. What do you have? A fucking water pistol? It's awesome.
It is good. It's like a hackneyed, cliched line, but it works.
It's badass.
It's hackneyed and cliched for a reason. Because if it's done right, it works.
Way to go, William Forsythe.
Yeah. He does. Goodspeed pulls out his gun and he like sort of stares at him.
No,
he's like,
sir.
Okay. Now, back up top, Hummel is like lamenting the massacre of all the men in the shower room. Clearly, he's not an evil man.
Right.
Right? Like, he doesn't take any joy in what's happened.
It wasn't supposed to have happened like this.
Major Baxter is telling him, you know, sir, we knew it might come to this. Meanwhile, the newcomers, what they are arguing with others.
Yeah, Darrow, played by Tony Todd, said Candyman, for those of you who don't know, said maybe this act will force them, the government, to pay up, and if not, then maybe we should execute a few hostages,
like to let them know we're serious.
Okay,
or whatever,
crazy
right?
ass.
Now someone calls out that one of the SEALs is still alive. And it was either, I think Darrow. Like, put a bullet in him.
Yeah, immediately pulls his pistol out to shoot the guy.
And Hummel steps in, holster that sidearm. Like, it's interesting to me that they're clearly like, that there's still a chain of command, even though they're well outside their roles as military men.
Yeah, it's interesting that these sort of militia mercenary guys have subjected themselves to some sort of outside of official rank hierarchy.
Yeah, it's bizarre. Now, the dude quickly passes away anyway, just from his wounds or whatever. Now, all the SEALs were wearing these, like, body cams.
Yep.
And that's Hummel grabs one of the cams and speaking into it. And he's like, you know, damn you for forcing me into this position or whatever. Like, and then
this
he
is
sort
your
of
bed.
Shuts it off. Yeah. You just can't help but you're sort of able to sympathize with Hummel.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't want any of this to happen. He just wants money for the fallen soldiers who have been screwed over by the military.
I wish that I had done just a tiny bit of research into what the United States Department of Defense budget would have been in 1996-97.
$100 million seems like a pittance compared to the trillions that are
getting spent. It is a drop in the bucket. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah. They spend $100 million on like probably coffee cups.
If they could take that money and pay for health insurance for however many millions of Americans, but you know that's neither here nor there. What is here nor there is that this episode of 6 Degrees of Schwarzenegger is over.
It's mercifully at an end. But we will be back next week, people.
Hasta la vista, baby.